I mean, yeah, I have a ton more, but I can't give you all my secrets all at one time.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome and thank you for joining me on another episode of Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. First of all, I want to thank all of my supporters, everybody who's downloaded, who's subscribed, who's listened, and who follows us on social media. Thank you guys so very much for your support. It means everything to me, truly. And a special thank you to those of you who've taken the time out of your day to give us a 5-star rating. I cannot tell you how much it means to me that you would go out of your way to give us a 5-star rating and let everybody know that you enjoy and appreciate what we're doing here on Far Betterment. So thank you for that. And if you haven't done so already, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. You can find us on your favorite podcasting platform by simply searching for Far Betterment. This episode's going to be a little bit different. In this episode, I'm joined by Tracy Lowry. Tracy's been on the podcast before, but this is completely her baby this time. She asked me to be part of this project where she speaks about non-military PTSD and how it's affected her and some of the tools and coping mechanisms that she's used in order to help people who have dealt with or are dealing with PTSD. And maybe you haven't found a way to manage or cope or feel overwhelmed. And I think she did an amazing job of explaining and also of opening up and being extremely vulnerable during this podcast. And again, this is her project, and I was very, very honored and humbled for her to ask me to do this with her and for her to allow me to ask her questions and for her to allow me to improvise and kind of go off book, so to speak. And for her to trust me, I mean, that's huge. It means the world to me that she trusted me enough to be the person that got to interview her and do this project with her. So I thank her for coming to me and for sharing her story. And I especially thank her for the desire that she has and the passion that she has to help others. So without further ado, here's Tracy Lowry for Far Betterment.
Hello.
Hey, Tracy, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. So you came to me a little while ago and asked me to help you with a project of yours that I'm really excited mm-hmm. about and I think is amazing and is going to do so much good for so many people. So I'm very honored and humbled and excited to talk to you about this. But if you could, why don't you kind of talk us through, first of all, you wanted to talk about PTSD and how it's affected you or people around you, and mm-hmm. kind of some of your experiences and where you think that PTSD came from for you and how you've mm-hmm. kind of dealt with it throughout your life. Do you want to mm-hmm. kind of break it down for people and let people know why you felt you could be helpful or why you felt like this was something that you're passionate about?
Yeah, I would love to. First, I want to kind of preface by saying that I am speaking out on PTSD with more of a focus of non-military mm-hmm. PTSD, because I am kind of taking the approach of not the textbook approach, but, you know, kind of the school of hard knocks, you sure. know, what I know, what I've learned. So I've not been in the military. I've not experienced that side of trauma, and the military and the vet stations around have great programs for PTSD and such. So I can't help much there because I haven't experienced it. I can give you a whole bunch of facts and stuff, but that's not what I'm about. So I focus more on non-military PTSD, not because I don't think it's important. I am very grateful that there are programs for military. I'm a huge supporter of our military, but I don't feel like I can bring anything to the table that they can't get somewhere else, maybe even better.
Okay.
So that's that. I also, in my dealing with my own PTSD, have found there's a lot of misconceptions out there. People don't like talking about it. You start talking about PTSD and anxiety and depression, and you know, people's you know, lips start to pucker. Like they don't know what to say. They don't know how to react because there's just this stigma. Like we don't talk about it, and it's a real thing. And some of the thing, like there's a couple quotes that I have found, and they just really hit me. And I think that's really why I went down this road. One, you know, PTSD is not a mental illness. It's a psychological injury. That just was like, holy cow. Like there is literal injury in our brains when these traumas happen. And that's why we react the way we do. And so it's not, you know, it's a mental illness. Yes, I think there's a degree to that, to be honest, but it's more of an injury than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about what's wrong with someone, you know, when someone has PTSD, oh, what's wrong with them? It's not about that. It's about what happened to them.
Yeah.
In their life. It's not about, you know, so, and it's not, I call it, I've kind of caught this phrase that, you know, PTSD has no uniform. And it kind of goes back to the whole military thing. Even in the military, there's different uniforms. There's different branches. PTSD has different ones too. As a nurse, I have experienced PTSD from traumas that I've been a part of in the hospital. You know, we take that home. It affects us way more than we ever let anybody believe. But there's just a lot of different, it's not just for military. And I want to bring more awareness to that. Because whenever when people think of PTSD, they think of, oh, yeah, my brother came home from the war and had flashbacks. And is that what you're talking about? What war did you go to? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and unfortunately, yes, I've been in battle. I've been in war, but it's been internal or with loved ones.
Yeah.
So it's different. So there's, I just wanted to try and touch maybe some of the less recognized forms, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Do you, I don't mean to stop you there, but do you feel like, I know you brought up a lot of misconceptions that you've seen regarding PTSD. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's something that you've kind of experienced yourself, that people always think it's just military? People don't realize that it's just... or that it's not just military, that it's something that can be caused by, oh, I don't know, car accidents,
right,
deaths of a loved one, that, you know, even natural deaths, or like you said yourself, you're a nurse, you deal with traumas every single day. You know,
right.
When you talk to people about that, when you tell them, no, PTSD can come from any of these things, what do you find that their reaction is?
There's a mix. Mm-hmm. When you originally first asked the question, what came to my mind was, and this is, I think, another reason why I'm very passionate about it. When I had kind of a mental breakdown of sorts, I really was in the depths of working through some things.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to my first counselor, and I say first because it didn't go past the first visit, because this man didn't even hear my story. I had not said anything other than, yep, I was in the ER the other night. They told me I had to come here. That's basically all he knew. And he proceeded to tell me how he had worked with prisoners of war and people who had had limbs shot off in war. And, you know, the typical what you think of military with PTSD. And he looked at me and he said, so I've seen way worse than anything you could come here and talk to me about. He called me a coward, said that was a coward way out, and that I needed to suck it up and deal with it because there's people out there who've had it worse.
Oh, wow. That's terrible.
That was my counselor.
Yeah, that's
and I was like, really this is surprising. Against everything.
Yeah. That's
now, that being said, prisoner of war, and those are things, again, I know nothing about. I am not comparing the two, mm-hmm. but trauma is trauma, and we all react to trauma differently, but similar, if that makes sense. That's kind of a an oxymoron, but...
No, not at all. It makes perfect sense. I mean, everybody deals with trauma, and we're all given a brain that kind of works. We might not process things the same way, but it works in the same way, and the parts of the brain that process trauma are the same, and so we right. have the tools.
And they're damaged yeah. to those parts, no yes. matter what the trauma is. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that is another part of me why I'm so passionate, because I'm like, no, like, everyone's trauma is real to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's okay to negate other people's traumas and how they're struggling to process through them. If that answers your question.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you put it really, really beautifully, really eloquently. That's just terrible that somebody, made you feel like it wasn't okay to feel. I think that happens far, far too often. I hope in the last 2 years or so, it's starting to happen a little bit less. I hope, and I think I've seen some growth as far as the way we deal with trauma, mental illness, PTSD, you know, injuries, things like that. But there's plenty of work we can still do. And I think this is a great start. I think you're making a great effort to bring light to this. And I just kind of want to ask, you know, specifically going back to being a nurse, you know, and how this counselor kind of, his words probably affected you well into your career. Obviously they've affected you, you know, well into your life. How mm-hmm. do you, and not even just as a nurse, but how does PTSD affect you day to day? And how do you cope? Do you compartmentalize? Do you vent? Do you, you know, what tools do you use to deal with your own PTSD?
I would love to tell you that I've got it all figured out. And, you know, I do this and this and this every mm-hmm. day without fail. I'm just going to preface this now. Anything that I say after this is what I have found works. It doesn't mean I am 100% perfect at it. This I'm still in the process of, and this is a great reminder for me. When you asked specifically as a nurse, mm-hmm. the first, we call it a code situation. You know, when someone is on the verge of passing this world, and we are doing CPR and administering meds and doing everything we can to try and save your life, we call that a code. Code blue, you might hear on like TV and stuff, which don't, TV shows are horrible examples, but code blue, you know, they'll yell. My first one was a very young child.
Oh my gosh.
And it was my first one. And so your first one is always scary anyway, mm-hmm. but it affected me. Like it was, but in the moment, you asked about compartmentalizing. I call like in my daily life, I'll be like, okay, Nurse Tracy wants to say this, or I'll say to deal with a certain situation, I'll say, I got to put my nursing cap on for this one because I do kind of compartmentalize, because in that moment of someone is getting ready to pass the other side and no. we're fighting, that is not the time where I can panic or cry or be sad or like, I have to use my brain. I have to be smart. And I'm not saying I always am, but you know what I mean? You have to have your head about you. So you do. You just kind of like wipe everything out and you take it one step at a time and you just think it through and you do what you need to do. And unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't happen the way you want it to. Sometimes it does and you celebrate those, but sometimes it doesn't. And there's a couple that I will never forget how it all went down and how they passed, and it affects me still today. And so it makes me that much more in the moment with every other code, because I remember how the family reacted or how I reacted. I mean, I gotta tell you, after every code, I am in the moment. I'm fine. I'm good. I am, you know, doing the list or going through all of the actions. It's afterwards, after all the paperwork's done, after everything is said and done, and I've comforted family or, you know, done the paperwork, you'll find me in the supply room bawling. Yeah. I laugh. It's not funny. But, and it affects you for, I know we a lot of times look as nurses like we don't care what's going on in the situation and that we're very callous about it. We are not. We are not. We are just in survival mode, and it's your loved one's survival mode. And that is our number one priority. Nothing else matters at that time. So that's how, and I will put on my nurse's hat in other situations. If I am in a, you know, with PTSD, you can be fine 1 minute and something triggers you that you can't anticipate or expect, and you can flip instantly into a panic attack, or you kind of disassociate and just kind of like zone out completely, and you're in a whole different place. And sometimes that just actually the other day it happened. I was driving to a restaurant to go have lunch or dinner with a couple friends, and all of a sudden it was like I didn't know where I was going. And I have been to this place a million times. I knew exactly where I was going, but something triggered. My guess is a song that was on the radio, but it was a trigger, and I didn't know where I was going. And I had to, what I would say, put my nursing hat on and just push it all out and just one step at a time, figure out what needs to happen next. I'm going to hit this light. I'm going to take a right. I mean, it literally, you just have to slow everything down, think it through, and just one step at a time. Because if you look at the whole elephant, you can't eat the whole elephant, right? Mm-hmm. But you look at it, you know, one bite at a time, you know, first you're going to go after the foot and then you're going to go after the tail. If you do it bit by bit, it's accomplishable.
As far as triggers go. Sense. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, you brought up triggers. Do you recognize your triggers, or are they kind of something you're still learning? And when something does trigger you, what does that PTSD look like? How does it manifest itself?
Okay, good questions. I'm doing much better at knowing what my triggers are, seeing them coming, and even try to avoid some of them. Mm-hmm. But you can't avoid all of them. You can't. So you do have to learn how to process through when triggers happen, because life happens. Some of my triggers, I have kind of a wide range of traumas. So like my triggers are very like different.
Mm, okay.
It just depends on what it's triggering. But like loud or sudden noises, I'm very jumpy. So like, if there's like a movie and there's like a really loud bang, I'm mm-hmm. the one that's jumping in the movie theater. Or I've even screamed once with a really loud noise. Like I'm really jumpy because things have happened in abusive situations that really just have me on guard. So loud noises. Let me think. Anytime I feel like there is a slight chance of abandonment, or, you know, someone might be lying to me. Those things really, but the problem is obviously those things aren't right, but because of the trauma, I see things where they're not there. So I'm overly expecting it, if that makes sense. I'll see the sign where it's really not
there. Like a false
they're going to abandon me. They're going to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
And there really is zero reason for me to think that, but it just comes with it. I will get dizzy if I start feeling a trigger, and I've been known to pass out even. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I do get the flashbacks. You know, even just watching, I have to be careful with what movies I watch, the songs I listen to. You know, if they're talking about, you know, love, breakups, death, weddings, suicide, bullies, what song and movie isn't about at least one of those, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I can just never watch a movie or listen to music again, but I have to kind of see how I'm feeling. And if it's starting to put me in the wrong direction, I change it. And I change it to a comedian or something very uplifting or inspirational. I'm very intentional with what I listen to and watch and what I kind of, my inputs, I guess, you know, even to the amount of exposure I get to certain people. You know, some people bring out the best in you, some bring out the worst in you. People can be a part of the trauma. And so, you know, you want to limit their access to your life if you can, if not completely eliminate them completely. It just kind of depends on who they are and what you can do. But, you know, when anything breaks, you know, a plate falls off the counter and breaks, you know, breaking glass, breaking windows, mirrors, it's a trigger for me, man. Cause again, in abusive situations, it brings me right back there and it brings me right back there.
Yeah.
And it's not always, you know, like flashbacks you see on TV, but it's just the feeling, like the fear and the trembling. And I will start to shake as if I'm in that unsafe situation when really I just dropped a plate on the floor and it broke.
Yeah.
I mean, but it will trigger feelings like I was back in the car with my very abusive significant other at the time, and he's punching out the windows and his rearview mirror. That's what I hear. I'm back there. And even if I'm not visualizing that scene, I'm feeling those feelings.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. It really does.
I mean, my goodness. I could give you a list a mile long of things I do to try and work through them or prevent being triggered or working through triggers or arousing those trauma feelings. I could do a whole probably 5-hour thing on that in and of itself because I'm very passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that everyone find what works for them. But in general, I mean, any kind of physical activity. And, you know, when you're at the bottom of the bottom, I've been there where it's like, I don't even want to get out of bed. So I'm not going to go to the gym and run on the treadmill for an hour, right? You just have to just step out a little bit and do 5 minutes of stretching. If that's all you can do, it's a win. So, or, you know, if you have dogs, go take them for a walk or just go outside and take a walk, enjoy nature, you know, whatever you can do just to be a little active, get out of the house, get out of your head, get that body moving. It helps your body process a whole lot better than if you're just laying in bed doing nothing, which I've done. Then after you get past the, I don't even want to get out of bed part, then you can start going up to, okay, now I'm going for a mile run, or I'm going to do a workout video today, or I'm going to do some yoga. Like, it's just, you just got to get active and kind of get out of your own head and just get your body moving. I don't know what it is about it that's so therapeutic, but it is. And wherever you're at in your spectrum, you work with it. You work with it. I think talk therapy is important. I think it's important to find the right person to talk to It could be a counselor. It could be a psychiatrist. It can be, you know, your pastor, preacher, you know, or a support group, whatever it is. I think it's important that we give those traumas a voice and let them out so they're not stuck inside. That's kind of deep maybe, but
no.
I think it's important.
Yeah, I think that's not too deep at all. That's what works for you, you know, like right. Keep going.
And medication, a lot of people, you know, look down on medication. It makes them weak, or people are, you know, weird if they're on medication, or they're, you know, quote unquote crazy if they're on medication. No, they're darn smart and trying to maintain and trying to maintain their life.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, if that's what you need to do, then that's what you got to do. Now, there was a time in my life 2-3 years ago where the medication was a little more than what I'm on now, but it doesn't have to be that way forever. That was just to get me out of crisis. I have dropped considerable medications now, and I'm all for it. Do not take what you don't need, because the side effects can be awful too, but if you need it, you need it. So it's just realizing where you're at and what works for you. I have found in this process, being creative is something that's important to me, and I didn't realize it until this, but I learned that I can semi-draw. I like to sketch, and what do they call it? I journal draw. When I'm struggling with something, I will kind of draw it out and get it out on paper that way. Sometimes I write. I'm in the middle of trying to write this book. And so sometimes I'm writing it out. Sometimes I'm drawing it. Sometimes I'm finding that perfect playlist to just sing and dance to get it out that way. But being creative is something that helps me. And I had no idea. Literally, I had no idea how important it was for me until about 3 years ago. I would have told you it didn't matter before that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And cleaning. I don't know what it is about cleaning, but it is very therapeutic.
That actually is a weird... That's cleaning also helps me a lot, too. That's so odd. Yeah. Well, I guess it's not odd. I guess it makes a lot of sense. It's kind of a release, and you're making things better around you, in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, you're literally picking up clutter around you.
Right. And organizing it, making sense of it, getting rid of the toxic or what you don't need or want.
Mm-hmm.
And you're organizing the rest into its proper place. I mean, I think that's pretty metaphorical, but I think it applies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
I mean, I have a ton more, but I can't give you all my secrets all at one time.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I just thought it was nice to relate to somebody, with the cleaning, just because it just helps me so much. So it was nice to hear that come out of someone else's mouth.
And cleaning and cooking. Like,
okay.
My mom will be like, okay, you're cleaning or you're cooking or, you know, like, what are you working through? Like, are you okay? And I'm like, yep, I'm cleaning. I'm fine. Like, this is how I'm going to become okay. So it's like my telltale for the outside world to know that I'm working through something, but at least they're not something, you know, I think another part of coping is figuring out what doesn't work. But it always seems to be what a lot of us go to first, like the drinking or the random, you know, sex or drugs or, you know, whatever those bad smoking, you know, whatever those habits are. I don't know why we do this, but we almost go to those first.
Yeah.
And those are going to make it worse every time. And I've been there. You convince yourself that it's how you're working through it. It's how you're coping, but they're not good coping mechanisms. And in reality, it might make things a whole lot worse. So it's learning what works. It's learning what you have to stop doing and replacing it with the good. Take out the toxic, take out the bad, bring in the good. Because if you don't replace the bad habits with good habits or positive enforcements, you'll turn back to the bad ones because it's what you know. And there's this empty space that you don't know what to do with. Well, they have to kind of replace the not so healthy options with going for a run or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. How do you think you got to that point? Like, what was the aha moment for you that took you from, you know, self-medicating to realizing that using other tools was maybe more helpful?
Oof. I am going to be pretty raw and real here. Honestly, it's when I had my mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just in a really bad place. I was in a really bad place in my head, and there towards the end, I remember talking to a friend saying, like, what am I doing? Like, this is not me. And they were like, yeah, no, it's not. And I'm like, what is my problem? Like, but it was like, I couldn't stop because it's all I knew to do. And I thought it was working. It wasn't. Until I broke. And then it was like, when I started coming out of it, I was like, I have got to find better coping mechanisms or I'm going to be in right back in this place again. And when I hit that rock bottom, it was, I am never getting to that point again. I am now a mother. I now have loved ones and a purpose in life. I have people who depend on me. Like, I can't get to that point anymore. And it was just having to be real with myself and be like, you know what? It's time to learn some new coping mechanisms. And I think a lot of that is why I also want to kind of bring awareness to it, because I don't want that to be everyone's aha moment. I don't want people to get to that point that I did in order to be able to turn things around. Like, you can be rock bottom, but it not be rock bottom. If that makes sense.
I
does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think it's a really great thing that you're doing to try to help or be preventative or proactive, I think is the right word. You're being proactive about telling your story for the benefit of others. So it absolutely makes sense. And I think it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. And I am personally glad that you're doing it. And I have so many questions. Yeah. So,
well, you know, I'm an open book. So,
yeah, absolutely. You've been like amazing every time we've talked. So, I know you're very open, and I think that's what's most helpful about you is how willing you are to be raw so that other people can benefit. You know, that's an incredible quality that you have. And actually,
it's a new learned one, let me tell you.
Well, it suits you well. And, it does kind of bring up kind of a question for me. You know, going through all of this, and we did talk about this a little bit, but how do you view or, you know, feel about what you've gone through with PTSD now that you recognize it? Do you feel, you know, grateful in a way? What has it taught you as far as how to recognize it for other people or to deal with it or to kind of offer your, I don't know, shoulder to cry on, so to speak.
Right. I'm going to try and word this right so I don't say the wrong thing. Sometimes I get kind of a brain freeze and I don't know how to put something. I don't want to offend anyone. Because one of the things, I've got a list of, you know, 10 things not to say to someone who has PTSD or anxiety kind of a thing. Like, this is what you don't say. And one of them I would say is, oh, you'll be grateful for this later. Like, you know, you're going to come on the other side of this and you're going to be grateful for that experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Like, you know, like you asked, I absolutely 100%, am grateful for the lessons I've learned in the traumas. No, I'm not grateful for the traumas, obviously, yeah. But the lessons are huge. And I am very grateful for those lessons. And because of that gratitude, I think I feel obligated is not the right word, called maybe to share that, to share what I've learned. Because for so long, you know, I kind of was in victim mode where, I mean, in transparency, a lot of the major traumas that you can list that people can go through to get PTSD, I can mark off a ton of them as I've been through. And for a while, I had this victim mentality of, why me? Why do I have to go through this and this and this and this, you know, all at the same time? Like, I am not Job. I am not anyone special, or so I thought at the time. Like, why am I being tested? Why do I have to go through all of this? And I think a lot of it is so I can now speak out on many different levels and many platforms and many different areas of trauma, not military, but many others, and be able to sympathize and be able to talk open about it and be real about what it felt like, how it was, how I got there, how you feel, how to help someone through those different traumas. I'm not using textbook to answer questions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, it's real life and it's raw and it's not, a lot of times the things I might say is not something that you're going to find in a book. You know, sometimes it's just, hey, it is what it is. This is what I did. This is what I learned, what not to do. And it's almost like when you know, if you work at it, I used to work at an ice cream store, and if you don't try different kinds of ice cream, different kinds of shakes or banana splits or slushies, you know, if you don't try a bunch, you can't tell other people about them. You can't help other people through making their decisions. So it's like I had to go through all of those traumas so I can then help others who are going through those different, I don't want to necessarily go into like everything, but we're talking like rape and loss of my very best friend in the whole wide world to cancer and divorces and miscarriages and abusive relationships, bullies at work or at school, people who have threatened my life to threaten my life or loved one's life, people I'm very close to, health issues, I was told I had cancer last year, which I do not. I don't. That was a scare, but it still was very traumatic. I mean, I was saying my goodbyes. We had a Christmas and everyone came because we thought it was my last one or could possibly have been
my
last one. And everyone wanted to get together one last time. It was very traumatic. And then It turned out it wasn't even true. And I've also been through, which I know many others have suffered, you know, not having a diagnosis. Like, you have all these things wrong. No one can figure it out. No one knows what it is. And so then you're almost chalked up to, oh, she's just making it up, or she's exaggerating, or, you know, it's all in her head, and you're almost not taken seriously. That is a very scary thing when the medical field, I hate to say, turns on you. I'm in the medical field, so I feel like I can say this, but it's almost like you feel like they turn on you.
Yeah.
Like, they're who you're going to for help because you're suffering, and they look at you and you're just fine. and it's very frustrating. So, I mean, car accidents, and, you know, I was engaged to, I was engaged, and the day, hours before we were to get married, he broke it off. I mean, that's, whew, that one was a toughie. I mean, there's just been a lot. There's been a lot, but now I can talk to someone in a very personal, real, raw, off the street kind of a thing. I don't have to go look it up and, oh, I don't really understand that. Let me look it up. I don't have to do that. Like, I get it. And there's just very different avenues I can go with it. And I'm grateful for that now that I'm pretty much, you know, I'm a work in process, let me tell you, but I feel like I've come basically out the other side, more knowledgeable, stronger, more confident in being able to help others get through it now, because I'm past a lot of the really deep, dark stuff. Now it's just more tools, more learning, more processing. I don't know if we ever really learn everything that we need to learn in any aspect. I think we should always be learning, but
yeah,
I'm not done with my journey, I guess is what I'm saying. But I've been through enough that I feel grateful that I can help other people. I've used those experiences to help others already on a personal level. And like I said, the gratitude of what I've learned and how I've come back on the other side. And now I'm like, I got to help more people. Like there's more out there than just in my inner circle. So I think I take it very seriously because of that.
Yeah, it sounds like you do. I think that's important. No, I mean, it's important, and you can hear your passion. You can hear how much you want to be helpful. You know, I think that comes across pretty clearly. You want to help. And empathize. It sounds like you've gained a lot of empathy through going through all of these things. And, you know, I have to say, I can't imagine, you know, going through all of this and still finding a way to still finding like that strength and confidence. I think that's so incredible that you've found that strength and confidence in yourself to be able to move forward, to be able to keep going, to be able to want to help people is pretty incredible. Where do you think that strength comes from? Where do you, like, would you credit somebody with that? Would you credit yourself with that? Would you credit, you know, something you've read or seen, or, you know, where does that come from?
Another excellent question. See, this is why I chose you, because you are good at this. You are good at what you do.
Thanks. but no, this is all about you. You know, like I guess I'm just curious, you know, somebody who's gone through so much, you know, I've gone through my own things, and, you know, I know how I've felt and I know what worked for me, but, you know, we all mm-hmm. go through different things. We all experience trauma in different ways. We all experience, you know, especially for people who, you know, myself, I've been suicidal. I've talked about it openly. I've talked about mm-hmm. it on this podcast, and I think I've talked to you privately about it. You know, so I know where my limits are. I know what pushed me to the edge and what got mm-hmm. me out of it and why I can talk about it openly now. But, you know, I can never say I've been through as much as you have. And I'm not saying that to take away from anybody else's trauma or to say that, you know, because a person has gone through so much, they're more worthy of feeling more
yeah,
or less.
No.
Yeah. I'm not trying to say that. But,
yeah. Me neither. But, yeah, I'm glad you put that out there, but I am not either.
And so I guess to me, the thing I'm in awe of, I guess, is that you still, your main focus is to help. It's not to there's no, you know, I need to fix my life. There's no, I need this for me. It's, you know, all about, I got through this. I want to help somebody else get through it. And that to me shows an incredible amount of strength and compassion. And I guess for me, it's just like, I want to comprehend where that comes from, because I want other people to comprehend it. And I want other people, as myself included, to utilize it, or to try to find that within ourselves so that we can be strong enough to help others as well.
Right. Well, I mean, I wish I had a one word, one sentence answer to that, you know.
Yeah.
Where did I find that strength? Some of it, like you said, is me. I had to pull it out of my own butt, excuse my crudeness, but I had to pull it out of somewhere.
Yeah.
In myself. And part of what I realized was there isn't a one thing fix all.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned, you know, I was stronger than I thought. I definitely have to credit Christ, my Heavenly Father, God. You know, I couldn't have done it without them. I know everyone doesn't have that same belief.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, that has been a huge part of it for me, was my faith and realizing who I am to Him and how much more important that is than really who I am to anyone else. And it was more me learning that it wasn't one person who carried me through it or was my inspiration. It took a village. I had my mother, holy cow. I don't think this is a huge secret. My mother and I have had some very high highs and very low lows, but through this, she was definitely one of my rocks. We were able to mend a lot of things and work through this together. And she has been a huge part of it as well. And as the rest of my family, very loving and supportive and, friends. And, you know, I mentioned earlier what I listen to. It's more in what the little things you do every day that are probably going to make the most difference. It's going to make the most long lasting. Anyone, you know, can go to a conference or, you know, a big, you know, a TED talk and feel inspired to make huge changes. You know, New Year's just happened. You know, how many resolutions do we have that already are out the window, you know, because it was just a one grand moment, but it's more of the habit that you do every day. What you watch, who you hang around with is huge. You know, I think of my, you know, parents as a kid, you know, we tell our kids, you know, your friends, you know, who you hang out with, it really matters. And not to make it sound trite, but it is so true. I mean, it really does. I've heard once, and I, you know, you are the five people you spend the most time with. You are a combination of those five people. Like, it can be so true, because it just, what's normal can be really distorted.
Yeah.
I don't think there is such a thing as normal. I really don't. There isn't normal. Everyone's different. We're all supposed to be different. So we just need to know who we are and who we want to be. And we have to surround ourselves with people and videos and books and whatever our inputs are. We have to choose those. Whether it's a comedian, because I need to laugh. I can't tell you how many times I was like, I'm in a really bad place. I can't do anything. I didn't have the energy to go for a run or even draw. Like, I just had nothing. So I go on Netflix. Boom, Kevin Hart. I'm laughing, because how do you not laugh at Kevin Hart? I'm sorry if there's people out there who don't like Kevin Hart, but that's mine. I mean, that's one of my go-tos.
Yeah.
It makes me laugh, and I didn't have to work for it. All I had to do was click it on Netflix, which, let's be honest, I'm on Netflix and Hulu binge watching anyway. If I'm just laying there doing nothing, I might as well be doing something that's going to put me in a better place.
Yeah.
So it's not so much the one big answer or the one big turning point. They're really, I didn't have that. It was more about learning what I needed to do for me every day, how to balance, you know, mind, body, spirit, how to balance all of that, family, myself, and work. How do I balance that? Balance, I think, is huge, because if we are balanced, then everything else can be managed. Learning to say yes to more things, but also learning to say no to more things. For example, obviously, we all hear the, you know, we need to learn to say no, you know, don't overbook yourself, don't overwhelm yourself. Very, very true, very accurate, and that is very much a part of it. But we need to learn to say yes to more things. And what I mean by that is, example, very small example, but I was coming home from somewhere and I was unloading my car. I had a bunch of stuff that I had to load into the house, and it was nighttime. It was cold. I mean, there was snow on the ground, but it was beautiful. It was just a beautiful night. It was cold, but it wasn't miserable. And it was dark and the lights were shining on the snow. And there was just something very magical about it to me for some reason. I really like being outside. And I'm loading in the car, and in my head, I'm loading the house going, man, I really should just, you know, enjoy the evening, or, you know, I should just stay out here. And it was, no, I gotta get this, and I gotta get this in the house, and then I gotta get ready for bed, and I gotta get ready, or sorry, my son, I try not to use his name, rap, but I gotta get him ready. And, you know, it was always my to-do list and what needs to be done. And that was in my head. And finally I was like, no, I can take 10 minutes and just enjoy it. And I've been working with physical therapy through some sciatic nerve pain. And I did my therapy outside in the snow. So I was still, you know, being productive or whatever, but I was enjoying being outside. And then I just stood there and just in silence. I think silence is important. I think part of my story of all of these things happening and the victimhood and that I put myself in, I put myself there. Everything that I would go through would be, oh, I'm fine. Oh, I'm fine. Oh, I'm fine. And I would just shove it in. And I would never work through it. I would never process it. I would just shove it down and I'm fine. And I would convince myself and others that I was fine. Some of my quotes would be like, I got big shoulders, I can take it, or I'm tough, I'm strong, I'm built tough, I'm hefty, tough, you know what I mean? And
yeah, absolutely.
How I dealt with things was just being very busy. I was just always busy. I was working, or I was always productive. I didn't feel like I could have just downtime. I think quiet time, even if it's just 20 minutes a day, just to like decompress, that's when I get my inspiration. That's where I get my, that's not the right word. My next step, my creative juices get going. That's when the real me comes out and my problem solving skills are at its best, is when I'm not jamming out to music, when I'm not busy doing laundry and cleaning and, you know, it's when I'm just silent. That's when I do some of my best inner work. I don't know if that answers your question, but those are just kind of the general things that really help me. It's Super Bowl time. And so I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize now for all of the Patriots and the Brady haters. I get it. You're out there. Don't block me off. You know, Tom Brady has been one of the people I look to as an example. No, I do not want to be the greatest quarterback in the NFL, obviously. But I mean, I was a Brady fan before being a Brady fan was cool, because he played for University of Michigan, which is my favorite team of all time. I'm a huge University of Michigan fan. So I was a fan of him when he was at University of Michigan. And I loved him because he was a Wolverine. Was he all that fantastic? No. When he went to the combine, he was the worst quarterback in almost every category at the combine. He, you know, was almost last pick in the NFL draft. He was almost overlooked completely. But he's been nicknamed the comeback kid. Like, there's all these things stacked against him. He was slow. He wasn't very coordinated. He wasn't good under pressure when he has to scramble. I mean, his rap sheet wasn't great. And now, arguably, I understand, but in a lot of people's eyes, he's the GOAT, right? The greatest quarterback of all time. Whether you agree with that, not the point. I think everyone can agree that he's very talented and has come a long way from where he started. The only reason he even played in college was the starting quarterback got hurt. And so he had no choice. He went in and took the starting spot, took it and ran with it. I hate to say, oh, he's my hero, my idol. And it's like a sports person. Like, I don't usually go there. But like I said, I don't look at him as he's the greatest quarterback ever. Just like I want to be the greatest quarterback ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more about his story. It's where he came from and where he went and what he did with it. He did not have everything lined up for him. He made things happen for him.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was his attitude and his frame of mind. And I mean, he's very intentional about those things. And he would, you know, when people throw that hate out at him and, you know, you can't do this or this is impossible or whatever, he uses that as fuel to prove that he can. And that kind of mentality to me has been, I have to say, a huge example to me. So, like I said, it has nothing to do with him being a great athlete or anything like that. But
yeah,
it's the comeback. It's the comeback kid. It's where he started, where he went, and he traveled a lot of ground through that. So I guess I have to throw that out there too, that he was, I mean, I've watched a lot of videos on him. I've read books. But the backstory stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't think that's, first of all, I don't think that's something to be embarrassed about at all. I think Tom Brady is a person that he's not just an athlete. He kind of transcends sports. And I'll be first to say, I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan. I'm a Denver Broncos fan. You know, we've lost plenty. We've lost plenty to Tom Brady. But I will say, I do believe he is probably the greatest quarterback who's ever lived. I would absolutely hand him credit for that. And I do admire as a person, just, you know, even the sports stuff aside, what he's managed to do throughout his life and how he has managed to take his, I don't want to say excellence, because I think he's kind of more than that, but to take his, to be able to motivate himself to achieve greatness through doubting and through people doubting him and through well, like you said, I mean, he was kind of an underdog, you know, through the beginning of his career, never thought he'd see a down, and then just through sheer luck, you know, he took this opportunity and like ran with it. I mean, that's an incredible quality to have. So I don't think that's wrong at all. I think that's pretty incredible. And I think he's a great person to choose to admire. So no. And I, like I said, I'm not the biggest Tom Brady fan, but as a person, I think I'm a fan of him as a person for sure.
Right. And I can understand that. I mean, I have my athletes that I don't necessarily like.
Yeah.
But I can be like, but I totally can't argue the talent or his accomplishments. Like,
no, not at all.
I'm just saying, like, as soon as people hear Patriots or Tom Brady, you get all the haters out there, right?
Well, sure. I mean, they,
and there's a lot.
The winningest team in football history, and they've beat my team several times. So,
and they beat every team.
So. Yep. So no. And I think that's where the hate comes from. I mean, I would have liked to have a couple more Super Bowls back because of the Patriots, but you know, I don't actually play on the field. So,
people get so intense about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm a hockey fan first and foremost. So,
okay.
I think
who's your team?
The Avalanche. Yeah. I'm a big time Colorado Avalanche fan. So,
I'm a Red Wings fan.
Oh,
being a Michigan girl and all.
Yeah.
I know.
You know what? I can't hate on you right now because of how your team is doing. So that's just like a little jab from me to you since you're a Red Wings fan.
If I'm that's fine. To be completely honest, I lost my best friend to a valiant, amazing battle of cancer.
Yeah.
And hockey was her sport. That was her favorite, probably. Me, a very close second to football, but she was very much a hockey fan.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things we did when we got older. We went to hockey games, whether they be farmer team or we did go to a Blackhawks game because she was in Chicago. I mean, that was, so I haven't been able to really follow hockey since she's passed. So I really couldn't tell you whether we're doing good or not, to be honest, because it's still kind of a very tender subject for me. And the Red Wings were her team. Yeah. And so I couldn't even battle with you on hockey because I don't know.
Well, that's a really, I mean, that's another great point though, you know, that speaking about triggers, you know, maybe this is another trigger for you that you recognize. And it brings up another great point. You know, myself, I don't know your triggers, and I've brought up this thing to you that potentially is a trigger. And I think as people who don't know, you know, what you're going through, we do have somewhat of a responsibility to try to be not delicate, but mindful. And I know you did want to talk about this. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead.
Oh, no, and respectful. I mean, there's always that, but
absolutely,
there's no way we can avoid all the triggers.
Well, what would you say, you know, to friends, family, I don't know, anybody in your circle, acquaintances, you know, anybody that might want to help or might not understand, what would you say to them? You know, things that they shouldn't do, ways they can help, ways they can best be supportive.
Right. Oof. Again, I could probably do a podcast on that just in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I don't hate talking about it, but sometimes it's kind of a touchy subject to talk about because mm-hmm. I don't want people who have maybe done some of the things that are on my do not do list,
yeah, sure.
do not say list.
Sure.
And they've done it. And it's well-meaning. And when we're in a better state of mind, we understand that you meant well,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it's just thinking about their trigger and like, and we know that you don't think about our triggers as much as we do. Like,
yeah.
We know that, but it's still very real to us. I actually have my list, I think, here. I have I don't even know what I did it for, but I was looking through and I saw, you know, 10 things not to say to a person with PTSD, anxiety, depression, you know, that kind of genre. And I have my top 10 commandments of what not to say. And they're really simple. It's not the obvious ones. I mean, obviously, if you know someone had a miscarriage, you know you're not you really probably shouldn't be talking about babies, miscarriages, deaths. I mean, there's just certain zones you know not to go to. But these are just the ones that you just really wouldn't think about it. Like, I hated it when I would be having a panic attack and my mom would be like, what are you anxious about? What's going on? Like, why are you anxious? There's nothing going on. Well, that's part of our anxiety, is we're anxious and there's no reason, there's no logical reason for it necessarily, but we feel it. And it just is. We don't understand it. We know it's irrational. We're embarrassed about it as it is. We don't know a lot of the time why we are reacting the way we do. You can't just cheer up. I mean, a lot of my dad, very well-meaning, would say, cheer up, sweetie. There's people in, third world countries that have it worse than you. I knew what he meant, and God bless him for it, but we can't, if it was just that easy to just cheer up, we'd be doing it. I mean, there is a need to kind of step back and not dwell on it for sure, but it's just not that easy. There's, you're just being lazy. You just need to get out of the house. Or I had someone say, well, I wish I could be on disability and just lay around all day. Yeah, you've got it real tough. That one just really, like, that's what it looks like on the outside. And we get it and we hate it. I hate it. I am, like I said before, I was very active. I always had to be busy. I always have to be productive. You know, saying yes to things I enjoy doing has been something I had to learn to do. But we are not just laying around because we want to. It's not, we're not having fun. It's not easy. The battle is in our head, and that's really hard to get out of. It's not, you're in a fight with a friend, you can remove yourself from that friend. You cannot answer your phone calls. You cannot be around them. When it's in your own head, it's always there.
Yeah.
It is hard to fight. It is hard to get out of your head. It's a battle every day. And just when we think we've got things under control and figured out, and we think we're doing great, one of those triggers can hit us, and out of nowhere, we have no idea why, but we are having anxiety attack. I mean, it's just not, it's not fun. It's not easy. We are in a battle in our head all the time when we're in that state of the PTSD. There will be people. Here's one of the things I would say to do. A lot of family or loved ones or whatever, they mean well. They don't want to push you. They don't want to make you feel guilty. So all of a sudden they stop calling. They stop inviting you to things. They start not telling you about their life, and treating you very different, trying to be thoughtful. But that just makes you feel more excluded, and you already feel weird. You already feel judged, even if you're not being judged. You're feeling all of these things. And then to have your loved ones really kind of seemingly pull away, meaning well, but it makes us feel more disconnected to any kind of life at all, let alone our own life.
Yeah.
And feeling alone and not supported. So even if you know we're going to say no, shoot us a text. Hey, we're meeting up for dinner at this time, this place. We'd love you to come if you can. Still invite, still contact, still. I had some really great supporters, both that were living close to me in a way, that would just come in and check on me. I had one of my nieces came and just did a makeup. She did my nails. I had another one come in and she did my makeup. I mean, just to let me know that they were there and they loved me. And they didn't talk, you know, we talked like we normally would. Sometimes we didn't talk at all, but their presence was huge. And I didn't feel forgotten because I was in kind of a really bad place. So still inviting, still understanding that there's times we want to talk about it and there's times we don't. There's times we want to be quiet and left alone, and there's times where we want desperately to have connection with someone, something. So not forgetting them, or at least not making them feel forgotten. You don't really forget them, and I get that, but does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I feel that last one, especially.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big one.
Yeah.
Don't tell us we're too sensitive. We already know it.
Agreed.
We know we're being irrational a lot of the time. And if we don't know it in the minute, we figure it out quickly after usually.
Yeah.
We know. And sometimes we just need you to be a little patient. And even there's, for me, sometimes when I'm triggered, I can react one of two ways. I can react in a way that is very aggressive and I attack before being hurt, or I attack before I can be attacked in my perception. There may not be a real attack going on, but I'm going to come out hard and kind of defend myself or protect myself. And sometimes I can lash out and just be ridiculous. I know that. Or there's other times where I've been triggered and I do the exact opposite. I clam up. You can't get more than two words out of me at a time. Sometimes I even zone out and I could be looking at the TV screen, but I could not tell you what I'm watching, or I'm in the room full of people and all of a sudden I'm quiet, I'm zoning out, and I feel so alone. I think it's fair for others to expect certain, you know, respect. We shouldn't be cussing at them, swearing at them. I mean, there's a level of respect that they still deserve, but not to take anything we do personally. If I'm lashing out because I'm trying to protect myself in my own head, don't take it personally. You know, I'll come around and apologize. I get it. In the moment, I can't see it. It's like the red flag for bulls. Like, I see red, that's where I go. Same thing with, I mean, quiet. No, you didn't say, it doesn't mean you said anything wrong. It doesn't mean you did something wrong. It doesn't mean I'm angry at you or upset at you. I just got triggered and I'm dealing with it the best way I can. And a lot of times I now divert to the more quiet because I don't want to hurt people just because I'm hurting. So I'm more so the quiet direction, but I've done the lash out thing, and we just want you to understand don't take it personal. Yeah. It's our own demons in our own head. And we know that. So if you need to take a step away from us for an hour or three, whatever, absolutely, we get it, but don't take it personal. I think those are big. You know, like I said, my nieces come and do those things with me because that's where I was at the time. I wasn't doing much. I wasn't able to do much. And so they would come and do my nails. They were still wanting me to know that they love me and they were there to support me. It wasn't one huge grand gesture. They didn't buy me a car. You know, they didn't take me on a vacation. It doesn't have to be big, grandiose things. Just let us know that you still love us and care. It doesn't really matter even what it is. We notice it and it's important. Just kind of meet us where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's huge.
love us anyway.
I think
another one of my major things is unconditional love. I find that very huge and very important. Too many people, I feel, in our lives, my life, I'll just say, because I don't want to project on other people what's my issue, but unconditional love. Finding those people who, no matter how low you are, how sad you are, how happy you are, the stupid decisions you make, they still love you. They may not support the decision you make. They may not agree with everything you say or do or feel, but they love you anyway. They support you anyway. You, yeah. Maybe not your actions, but you. That's huge. And I think it's important to find those people and hold them close, because I have learned they are few and far between that. You know, I'll just say I've had people in my life who absolutely loved me as long as I was doing what they wanted me to do. But if I made a decision that they didn't agree with or that didn't meet up to their standards in their life, then the love wasn't there. The support wasn't there. It was very conditional. You know, if you do what I want you to do, then of course I'm going to love you and help you and support you and all these things, but I don't agree with that decision, so you're going to pay for that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ignore you, or I'm going to treat you bad, or, you know, whatever the case may be. That's a huge thing to me. And I think that is probably what we need the most. Would you say that? I mean,
yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's pretty accurate, at least for me.
Yeah.
Because in those moments, I didn't make the best decisions, and I knew it, and I really know it now. But I had those friends that were like, yeah, no, this is not you, but loved me anyway. Supported me anyway, you know?
Yeah.
I have the couple that, you know, can talk to me pretty point blank, and you're being an idiot, but they do it in a way that I still know that they love me, but they also love me enough to be like, hey, this is not normal for you. What's going on? I mean, how can I help you? What's going on that you're lashing out like this? Still love me, even when they're calling me out. There's just a way.
And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't. There's really no reason.